How can we as sports medicine professionals support you as the athlete better?
I think firstly, build that trust. And I know this is not a doctor's job, but to show the key, like the main thing is like I know what you're going through.
Yeah.
And check in from time to time.
Welcome to the SASMA podcast, your source for the latest insights in sports medicine. Designed for healthcare professionals, we cover everything from injury prevention to athlete performance and mental health, helping you stay informed and excel in your field. Let's dive in.
Welcome to another episode of the SASMA podcast. So today we're doing something a little bit different. We are starting a new segment called The Athlete's Voice. And our first guest today we have is Gio Aplon. Gio, thank you for joining us so much on this episode. It is a pleasure. So this conversation is pretty much just going to explore your journey as a professional rugby player from 2005 and you retired in 2021. A long career. And I want to dig into that a little bit as well. And primarily, I also just want to go into your experiences with working with sports medicine professionals throughout your career. And I think the unique thing with you is that you've played within South Africa, you've played internationally, you played for the Sevens, you played for the Springboks. So we can cover quite a bit in that sense. So we just want to reflect on some of your career highlights, challenges, transitions, and then just some valuable insights, I think, that we can take back as sports medicine professionals working in teams, specifically from a player perspective. So I think firstly, just to set a bit of a scene, you're from Houston. How did a boy from Houston go to obviously break into professional rugby and into the Stormers firstly, and then to the Springboks, and then obviously your international career in and amongst that?
Yeah, Doc, you probably know the long and short of being too small. So when I was at school, we had high school, I don't know, we had one team per age group. So if you're the scrum half, one place first half and another one place second half. There's no but like little substitutes in bomb squads. You get your set time. So from there, I never imagined or dreamt about becoming a professional rugby player, because for us, Houston, small fisherman's town, being called to small your whole life onwards, you never thought that that thing is. And if you know, back in the day, it was all about size. If you post 1992, when we got re-entered into international sports, the frame and the pitch you got off rugby players was massive. It was a competitive sport. And
yeah,
boy from Houston, from a fishing village. I mean, it wasn't on your to-do list.
Yeah.
So when I got to university, coming here to study, so it was basically started be accounting, and that's where it opened. My first year, I played a bit of soccer. Hostel soccer. In my second year, I went to the fourth and fifth team trials just to check it out, because obviously you're curious and stuff. And then I played a little bit second team. They said, no, you can't play fourth and fifth team.
Did they also say you're too small for
that? That's what I, because again, it at the hostel, the talk was being small, and I was putting up my feelers, and you already heard like, oh, no, there's a bigger scrum half. And that, I played scrum half that time. I was terrible at passing. That's why I started running. And, but then it started happening, Doc. Like my third year, I started playing a bit at Marty's. I think they needed a couple of players, and then think that time the quota law came out, and they had to get a couple of players.
Yeah,
and then some of us joined, and then I played like junior rugby. Then I played like in the mornings, like from 12:30, we play like a junior team, and then after that, I get into my car and I go play for Austin first team. So I played, it's not recommendable, but I played two games.
Player load and welfare.
So that player welfare was not a thing that time. And I think the other journey started, but I think, Doc, the main thing was also people started talking about, hey, you could play for the Stormers, but that never crossed my mind because of having this negative thought of small and this and this.
Yeah.
Thought like, ah, these people are dreaming.
Yeah. Mm. Now, when did that become a reality?
I think the most that I made, but for a long while I played in amongst the Marty's teams, but not like Marty's one. And then when I made Marty's the first team, like you start thinking, and then you're like, oh, okay, but maybe not. And I think a phone call from Nick Mallett on a Wednesday afternoon at
1 o'clock, 2 o'clock on my way to pay a bill at student medicine here at campus. Phones me and it's like, how quick can you get to Newlands? I'm like, who's talking here? Because I didn't have the number. And he said, listen here, Gaffi the Toy went down in the training yesterday. They need someone. And then that weekend, I was on the bench for Western Province against the Sharks.
So very much by chance, eh? Like
very much by chance. And I think also another interesting story, my chance at Marty's I got was literally having a passport. So they picked a guy that was supposed to go to Rome Sevens. At that time, it was still the Roma Sevens. But the guy got there and he said, listen, he doesn't have a passport. And lucky enough, I had a passport. Having been to, I think, America the year before that through a church group, I had a passport. And they're like, okay, then you go. And then got there, got play of the tournament. We just lost in the final against Italy in National Sevens team. And from there, it started. Because the head coach there was the first team head coach, Doc for Pretorius at Marty's, and he saw a bit of talent, and then he backed me throughout that.
Now, how old are you there?
I was about 20, 21.
So what would that have been, about second, third year?
Yes.
So is your plan always, I mean, you were obviously studying accounting at the time. Mm. Was that your plan?
Yeah, that was the plan. Coming to Stellenbosch, there was never a plan to play rugby. As you can see, I played a little bit of, because you wanted to keep active, you played a bit of soccer my first year for the courses. But I was in the library like 24/7. I wasn't good at studying. That's why it took me so long to finish that degree. So I was literally coming here to study. There wasn't like side shows. And so when this thing happened with the rugby, When in my second year, when I went to for the fourth and 15th trials, when I actually went there and I started playing and people were starting saying, oh, okay, hey, this guy can play. The 1 week I will play and the next week I won't play. Just not for myself to create that expectation of, hey, something can come from this. Because I was focused on studies and I always had the excuse now I had to study. So yeah. 1 week I'll play, 1 week I won't play, but just to lower that expectation of something might come from this and stay with reality and listen, you came here to study. You know what's going to happen. You're going to start playing well and people are going to tell you, you're too small for this game. You're too small. So that I always kept that reality, in the checks and balance of that reality.
And
was
one of those hesitations that you were told you were too small?
Yeah, I think consistently. There was one instance I got to Marty's training. I was pulled up to Vicks and one of the coaches, I won't mention the name now, asked me, like, how much do you weigh? And at that time, I was weighing 60. You can imagine. And then the next morning, I was in the team below that, for no particular reason. And I don't know. Maybe it was because another guy came back. But in my mind, it was, oh, here we go again.
Mm.
Same story. Yes, I weighed 60. I got like weighed 2 pairs of socks just to look a little bit more bulky.
Just to give you some calm.
But I mean, when you get told like, oh, you can play, but you're just a small. When you consistently get told that, you literally get into a defensive mode where whenever you. Like the indicators, whenever you hear someone says, I'm like, okay, then you, it's almost like you have a backpack at your house and you know it's not your house. So whatever, yeah, someone knocks at the door, you're like, I knew this day would come. Okay, yeah. Like my bags, I knew this wasn't my house.
So, I mean, those are obviously some of your challenges. What are the standout memories of your career?
I think that, I won't say the difficult times. I think the times where you prove people wrong. So I think going onto the field for me was never about, I won't say the accolades. It was just proving that there is a spot for a smaller player to be there. Like the tackle I missed and the tackle the bigger guy missed, it's the same tackle we missed.
Yeah.
The guy he runs over and the guy I beat with my feet, it's the same principle, it's the same method, not method, but it's the same result that it gets.
Yeah.
It gets us across the advantage line. And saying that now sounds much easier, but being in it was tough, because like, I would always tell people that my journey when I was in Cape Town playing for the Stormers, and this is my personal method, how to stay sane, was going to that field and make sure I don't miss a tackle. I didn't worry about attacking. I was like, just don't miss a tackle. Don't miss your high balls. Don't let people have excuses that you shouldn't be here. And that was probably my main mindset before I went overseas. And I want to say probably my own mindset coming from that background. The shackles is just off and you can just play and be who you want to be. But I think before that, it was literally go into that field and don't disappoint the smaller guys. Don't disappoint that stigma, or don't give people reason for that stigma to say, we told you, you shouldn't be there. And that was probably where I hit a couple of concussions, which was not smart. But where you, with someone with a bump, you'll just get up. And you know, like, I'm a little bit dizzy here, but
yeah.
I need to show them.
So you just focus on defense.
And that was my I won't say, you know, my coping mechanism to make sure that the newspapers can't say that this guy can't tackle, can't say that this guy doesn't belong into the field, can't say that, listen, yeah, we should have picked the bigger guy because we told you he missed a tackle. And I think that was, and obviously the attack came from that, but it was never going to the field and show people how you can run. Like, it was so people like, you're not here by chance. You can actually stand your man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And interesting, because you mentioned that, and I found a quote on, this is obviously still when you're playing Super Rugby with Stormers. And it says, Gio Aplin had one of the deadliest steps in Vodacom Super Rugby. And if he found himself one-on-one with a defender, fans were in for a show. So it's actually amazing that you focus on your defense, but it's still your attacking style that you still stand out for.
I think later when your name was a little bit more established, you kind of think about that. But also like that, a true reminder for me, of obviously something that was, I'm not a doctor, but in your medulla oblongata. It's like when that one guy, when the incident center, happened at Marty's, where the coach said, listen, or asked you how much you weigh. So immediately I will go maybe this week with the attacking mindset or have something like that. And as soon as I miss the tackle, I go back like, yes, isn't it?
Ah, okay.
You're not here for that stuff.
Yeah.
Come back to what you.
So your baseline, what do they call it? Chop wood, carry water was
yes.
Defense was.
Defense was.
Make the tackle.
No excuses. So I always had this motto that if a coach drops me, he must lie to me.
Mm.
So he must lie to me and tell me, listen, you can't do that. And I knew in the back of my mind, I didn't miss a tackle. I didn't, couldn't compete for a high ball. I couldn't clean a rack out wide or whatever. Let him rather lie to me than I'll be comfortable. But if he speaks the truth, then that's on me.
Yeah.
So that was always the kind of thing I had about surviving professional rugby.
But now you did this for 16 years.
Later on, I think that was my first part of my journey, which also like coming from Marty's, being at Province, which also set a good standard because I knew what I was happy with and what I wasn't happy with.
Mm.
And I think a great eye opener was for me when I went overseas to France. And I always like, you have this thing in the back of your mind, like, I'm going to make money now. I can just relax. I don't have to worry about tackles. And when you get in, you must tackle that thing because that standard was instilled in you.
Yeah.
Knew that wasn't you. It wasn't good enough. And for me, the real eye opener was I was selected for the Barbarians 2014, 2015 season. We played our first game on a Thursday night against Ireland and we beat them, also Young Ireland, Irish side, and then we played against England this Sunday. I probably had the worst game of my life. Like, I was focused on, I had like a nice haircut, I had a line in my ear. I was like, yeah, I'm going to step these people. And I was horrible, like literally like kicking, yeah, and like couldn't catch a ball. And that brought me back a little bit to reality. Yes, you're in France, like people accept you for your attacking ability or whatever, but you still have standards. You still have some stuff that got you here and some stuff you didn't negotiate. Even at the full Newlands, you were focused on, this is what I need to do.
No.
Forget about the sideshows.
Yeah.
And now suddenly you forgot all those things. And this is actually the result of you thinking, I won't say bigger than the game, but thinking you can move away from your standards.
Yeah.
And what you set your game on.
Yeah.
And then after that, I came home. It was always the break. It was in the June break. I came home and I won't say refigured, but I rewired my thinking. And I think from there, I got back to listen. Yeah. Not back, totally back to being defensive, but saying, listen, yeah, if you want to attack, yes, you can attack, because these people, what was good about Grenoble, they didn't want the fullback, they wanted me. So they knew, and that was actually good for me, they knew what they were getting. I didn't have to pretend or be someone else. So that was the good part. But I also knew that you had standards. So if someone at Province looks at you now and they see you missing tackles, you don't care. Like,
yeah.
Will they be happy? Like, that's the product they sent back. That's the product they made out of Cape Town. Would you be happy with that? Yes, you can do the attacking, but you can show like the shackles is off, but you still need, there's still a name that you need to protect, that you've built up through resilience, through whatever you wanted to call it, survival mode. There's still a name you need to keep intact and before you can go on to this, to being this entertainer.
And that was just, so an internal driver kept you going for that long?
Yeah, I think it probably came from a place where you, where you, it was unconscious because you were just surviving. I won't say surviving, where you were still, you were just battling to be at this level and to prove every week. And it's almost like you play this game. It almost felt like you play this game. Like the next game is a clean slate. Mm. It's like there's no reference of, oh, this guy did this last week.
Back to zero.
Like it's back to zero. If you miss a tackle, like, oh, we thought. Like if you miss two, like, yeah, we should definitely.
Yeah.
We should definitely. And I don't know if that was just me hyper thing, that whole of view of myself.
Yeah.
But that was like in the South Africans, the vergroot glass I was playing under. And that was... Maybe other people didn't, or newspapers didn't mean it like that.
Mm.
But that was just the pressure I put on myself in terms of that is how you will survive. And that is every week you need to prove. Every week you need to show these people you belong here. And later it became easier when your name was there and you became a seasoned campaigner. But you always need in the back of your mind one mistake that you like. Things can
go
south very quickly.
And how old are you when you turned professional? When you turned pro?
23.
Young, eh?
Yeah. So what was also good for me back then is like I came through the club system.
Mm.
It was like Poland club system and I played Marty's club system. So you also, back in the day, there wasn't a lot of gymming. So I think when my body got introduced to professional rugby, it fully developed on its own.
Yeah.
Maybe good and bad because you weigh 60 and that maybe... If you ate more, whatever. But I think my joints, I didn't until my last 2020 and 2021 when I had ACL or like ligament injuries. But before that, I never had like hamstrings or stuff. And
maybe
because I only started like being introduced to a gym at the later stage or to professional rugby or to this hectic life of being a professional at the later stage. So my body kind of developed maybe a bit later, which probably now you would probably be behind. If I'm now a kid and I only start jumping at 23, I will be way behind.
Yeah.
Even if I have all the talent. I mean, when the first time I met Paul True, I benched about 30. And I was proud of it. And he's like, you can't bench 30. You can't bench 30. Like the bar didn't count for anything. It was a course. So I'm like 250s on that. And I was like proud. Like I could bench 30. And he was like, you cannot bench 30.
This wasn't when Paul True was the...
He was the sevens coach then, but obviously... Just before, before I came into the sevens, he had some invitational teams and he spotted me through Marty Sevens and like emerging sevens. And I was chuffed that I could bench 30 and he wasn't like impressed.
But, so, I mean, we've chatted about this in terms of how the game has changed between, I guess, the turn of rugby becoming professional in 95 and you sort of, there's like a couple generations that have passed that.
Hmm.
And like you say, now if, I mean, a junior Springbok player.
If you guess, I mean, a junior player, Springbok player is 1920.
Yeah.
That time I haven't seen the inside of a
junior. Yeah, exactly.
But that, and yes, our upbringing was different. Like, we only saw international rugby when I was grade 4. Before that, it was New Zealand and Australia, 3 o'clock in the morning, with someone who was eminent there, like,
the eminent they still have the area
and the decoder. So that was our upbringing. And so we would, like playing as a youngster, you would just imagine things because you didn't see. Like, if you look now, like my son can go onto YouTube, can watch his, I record his games, he can watch it. Like, we were imaginary players from day one. We just imagined, like, we didn't even know how we looked on the grass when we were playing on other people's grass and were chased off. But that was our life. And that was also the thing for me. Like, so when I grew up, like, you always wondered, how does the Springbok pass? How is it the inside of this change room? Knowing that, I might never get there. And then when it became a reality, when you started playing for Marty's, you were like, maybe I'll get a chance to see how it looks in there. Because obviously now I played club rugby, you go to different clubs, but never at Newlands. So now the first time you actually walk in, you're like, this is how the change room looks.
Yeah.
And you kind of get that, this is what I was working towards when it became a reality, like, now I'm here. And it's not like I haven't seen it before, like on a TV or like, this is how a professional, and then you figure it out, like, okay, I'm a professional now, but we still eat lunch here down the corner at KFC.
Yeah.
like that kind of stuff. And then you figure it out as you go on. Okay. I'm jumping. I cannot only jump when the team jumps.
Yeah.
Well, I cannot need to do for this. I need to do stuff on my own.
Mm.
And through that journey, you kind of figured out like, where do you see yourself? Because back in the day when I was at school, I always wanted to make a team, like Boland was my reason. So I always wanted to have a Boland's jacket. Like that was the thing for me. Like, yo, if I can get a Boland, I can make a Boland team, even if I'm on the bench, I just want the Boland jacket. And later on in life, I had a drive to become the best, because I learned early that having the jacket is not enough.
Mm.
Being the best might get you the jacket.
Mm.
And then that was consistent. When I used to go home, I would be the guy that jogs to the beach and back. And people probably thought, man, this guy's crazy. Where is he going? But that was then became the drive that I knew getting to this province team or getting this kid wasn't enough. Like, I need to be the best. And then I'll have a chance to get the jacket or get into that team. And that was always the drive, because it's easy for me to be better than you. Yeah. But I will never be the best.
Yeah.
But I need to strive to be the best version of myself. And that came through that and said, or not the setbacks, that mindset of, okay, I need to prove to them that I'm good enough. And when they accept me that I'm good enough, then they need to see I'm one of the best. So that drive in between was always that, moving that marker back and forth, finding that balancing. Okay. And later on is like, okay, there might not be people that when you mature, you're like, there might be people that never accepts you or never accepts that you're good enough. But now you need to show whoever accepts that they can brag with you or about you against those people. And that was probably the drive that, and where we come from, there wasn't money and TV, and that wasn't big, like, but it was your name. It was like your name meant a lot. Like, what can people say about you? Can people come up for you? Like, I won't say your manners, but if you're good, can people state a case for you against people that think you're not good?
Yeah.
And I think that was the drive that, like, embarrassment. Because when I grew up, we had All Blacks. Like, our whole town is All Blacks, Wallabies. Like, Springboks only came later. So now suddenly, 2 years ago, we were joking in the street about running around by Joe Rokothoko and Dan Carter. Now I'm playing against them. So my main thing is being in Christchurch, playing against Dan Carter, Aaron Major, Casey Lalala, and those guys. You like, whatever happens on this field, I still need to go back to Austin.
I get you.
I'm going to get embarrassed if I must tackle or anything here.
I get you.
I still need to go show my face back home. So I'm going to give everything, even if I have to die on this field. I'm not going back to Austin with being alive, but my name is in Christ.
But wasn't there a lot of, it's a lot of pressure. And again, I keep going back to 16 years, because 16 years as a professional rugby player is long, especially when you're dealing with the ups and downs and the pressures. And I mean, that's just outside of the actual game.
Yep.
It's more the mental health aspect of it. Mm. When you do have a lot of pressure.
Mm.
I mean, wasn't that, how much did that contribute to your game, or how much did that contribute to your retirement at the end?
I think when I retired, it was probably because of the injury. My wife always say that you probably would have never retired, because someone would have had to tell you, listen, if I can't hear me. Because in my mind, I would always feel that I could still prove. And I think, like, because of that start of that, the way that fire was started. So the fire started, I need to prove to these people. So when I got to province, I need to prove to those people that I can play. Yeah. When I got to Springboks or wherever it is, when I got to France, I need to prove to these players that was the money worth they spent.
Yeah.
When I went to Japan, I need to prove to them, listen, you made the right choice of signing a guy that's the same size as the Japanese.
Yeah.
So why would you sign?
Yeah.
So I had to prove. Going to the Bulls, I need to go prove, like, this is the reason why Jake brought you back, to install what you've learned into youngsters, like back in the day, like Kane and Kirkley, all those youngsters there. So everywhere I had to go, I found something to say, listen, yeah, this is what's going to make you tick. You need to prove why this guy's got trust, faith in you. Back then it was, I need to prove I belong here. So now people have accepted, okay, you can play, you can belong here. But what is next? Okay, in France, they paid a lot of money for you to come here at this club. You're probably the highest paid player at a small club. So you need to prove to these people they made the right choice, because going back to Austin, it's your name. So if your people from Austin gets there and they say, oh, there's a slap hut, how do you go back to the town? So it was my journey was driven by that. It's like, so when you get to the Bulls, unfortunately, I got injured. But if people have to ask a reference to take, why did you bring this guy here? And then he should be able to say, this is why I brought him here. See, yeah, this is the differences he made here. And that was always the driver. See, at 38, he could still play. He could still, you know, whatever that might be. So that was always a drive. So even at 42, if my knee wasn't buggered, I would find the reason to say, that's why Doc said I should be on the field.
So do you think that the Joe Applin story would have been different if you were a bit bigger?
It might have been. I always wondered that, Doc, while I was playing. I like, why couldn't I weigh 90? Why couldn't I weigh? But also, it made me intrigued with the game. So it made rugby like mathematics for me. Like I had to find, like, let's say the opposition is the problem. I need to find the answer. Let's say like the answer, I need to create the problem. And that was good for me because I had to find ways to be just as relevant or effective as a 90 kilogram.
Oh, yeah.
So I could never run into a tackle and relax. I had to find like a body weight. I need to find like a gap. I need to, must I step? I should do my prep so I can understand where this guy is strong. When he comes for me around the corner, when he sees smaller guys, what does he normally do? Does he bump them? So I think that edge probably got me a little bit further than I was supposed to be if I was 90 kilograms. Because if I was 90, I would have stand my man. I wouldn't have think like, you know, how do I tackle Jerry Collins or Chris Masawi when they come around? How do I tackle Tauro Kostoko when he comes around the corner? If I was 90, I would have think, okay, put your shoulder down. But now I'm 70 odd kilograms, so I need to find a way. I need to find a way how to beat him. I need to find a way not to be found wanted.
Yeah.
When a prop runs, when I go clean a breakdown wide, I need to be there first. And I can't be there late because I don't have another tool to use to say, okay, I've got my weight so I can clean him. I need to be there early because if he's over the ball, there's no way I'm going to move him. So I think in terms of being smaller, that probably prolonged my career because I had to consistently find ways. And maybe these guys know I step. So then I need to create scenarios in my head, but maybe they know. Maybe they figured me out. Second year in Super Rugby, they probably know about me now.
No.
So now I must find a new way. So now I need to be able to, when I'm in the 22, I can't run everything anymore. I need to work on my kicking skills. I need to work on my eyeball, or because now they're going to say, oh, this guy's 1.75. Let's kick eyeballs.
Yeah.
So consistently, if I was taller and your traditional rugby guys, maybe that things would have come naturally. No, I wouldn't say naturally, but easier. But now you're this short, you're this age, or you're this small, or whatever. Now you need to find ways, consistently find ways to be effective. And I think that's probably what the driving factor was, or what prolonged your career, because everywhere you got, you had to find a way to like survive. In the French league, it's different. In the Japanese league, it's different. So I think that was a survival too.
So you're just talking about that there. That probably then speaks to, and I found another quote. Obviously, there's a lot
that's
about
you. Me saying that.
This one was you, actually. At 38 years old, I've never had such an injury before and has been frustrating than anything else. But the worst thing is feeling helpless.
Yeah.
This was your ACL that, like you said, that then ended up ending your career.
Yeah.
You retired after that?
I think I probably could have gone, but I think it was just inevitable that I knew I just wanted to play maybe one more game. And at that time, it was COVID. I think every rugby player that plays 16 years wants to walk off and clap.
Yeah.
Let the people clap. But I think that was probably the nostalgic moment that you want, where you want to go on your own terms, but you know rugby doesn't work like that.
Yeah,
I think that was probably the one thing that kept me going until December 2021, where I had six more months left of rugby to have a chance to play one more game. And my family was back in Cape Town, and I was just like, listen, yeah, you're just delaying the inevitable.
Yeah,
and you're now hoping for one game. We're going to walk up and you might come in 6 months time and they say, listen, your knee is totally buggered or whatever.
Yeah.
And then you've wasted 6 months where you could have started in your next career, which you prepared for.
Yeah.
So I think, yeah, that was just how it ended.
And what was your experience like with the rehab process for that?
So I think a bit of maturity, but also a bit of frustration, because I got there, I think I played two games and then I got injured. And I mean, I came from overseas. I came to help the team. Yes, there was different.
You were playing at?
In Japan.
In Japan prior to coming back to the Bulls, eh?
And then I actually thought like I was they got me here to yab the young boys or be a mentor, but obviously still playing effective. And now that part was gone. So what was actually good, or what was pleasing, what was calming for me, was the Bulls management still allowed me to have an influence off the field.
Okay.
Like I was still in team meetings. They still gave me a voice. I think that helped me a lot in terms of the rehab. The physical rehab itself was crap as any rehab. It's like the first time you can't use your leg is sore, but you can't use your arms because you're in crutches.
Yeah.
You're just feeling hopeless. You're parking in this Avo parking. You've got this big brace everywhere you go for coffee. There's one leg is outside of the table. People walk past. Excuse me. So you feel like you're in the way.
You can't
handle yourself. My family's back in Cape Town. At that stage, I've been a father who's raised two kids already. Now I'm raising myself.
Yeah.
So that kind of frustration, not knowing when you will be ready, knowing it's a process, but knowing also like you're here actually to help. Knowing that part, but then also the other part that was fulfilling, that you could still be part of team meetings. You could still be in the video session. You could still help the youngs. You could still be next to the field. So I think that part is at that stage of my career was good. But if you think, if I'm a young guy now and I don't have any experience, the only thing I have is being in the physio room, rehabbing. And when I'm outside, I'm watching rugby. I don't have an input.
Yeah.
So if people, when the coaching staff, being Jake and his coaching staff, then at the Bulls, allow me to be that, that was also like the part that you must play.
So
they can see suddenly you told Stavina to do this and he's doing it. It's almost like you reenacting, like, okay, that's what we spoke about in the week.
Yeah.
So that part that you must on the field, you actually get through mentoring. But the part that you still need to do a rehab is still tough.
Yeah.
I mean, it's the idea of building up your
quad again,
and your quad again, your hamstring, making that strong. That was challenging. And obviously, like, your mind, because your mind is telling you you can be ready in 6 months.
Yeah.
Or you can be ready as soon as you're pushing yourself that, but your body sometimes doesn't agree with that.
Mm.
And now you get frustrated. Because I remember my first, coming back the first time, I had like I almost thought at some stages I had compartment syndrome in my calf, because every time I started running, it felt like my calf would one wants to pop. It was like hectic. No, it felt like it would swell.
So then,
and then I went for a scan. I couldn't find anything. I couldn't find it. And then later on, we found that it was the fascia that got a bit tight.
Mm.
And when that got loose, but like little setbacks up like that, knowing that you were brought back to play. Into mentor, doing the mentoring part, doing everything you can now to get back into the field physically, but then having these little setbacks, like, and then your mind also plays with you, like, yo, next time are you, because now you're older, now you also know, like, our tackles, you know, 16 years of tackle.
Yeah.
So now you also, your mind comes in plays with you and says, so can you still do this? Can you, are you going to be fast enough? They say they're not going to take off your hamstring, but, you know, you take off your quad, you're going to be 4%. So that battle you're fighting, and then these little setbacks. But what was nice for me, but might not be good for another player, is that I had that other satisfaction where I had an influence and weekend I could see that, where a normal player who wasn't there for in his mentoring capacity might not have had that, which would have been, if you think of just having that struggles, would have been.
So it's almost like you still needed purpose in your rehab.
Yes.
I mean, purpose in the rehab process. Obviously, you needed to do your rehab to get to recover from your surgery and your injury.
Yeah.
But what actually kept you going was the purpose within that.
Within that. So I can be there at 6. So normally if you do rehab, you get there at 9 and 10 and you do your rehab and you're kind of isolated. But I got there at 6 with the boys, did my rehab quickly, got into the meetings, be next to the field, do my quick sitting when they do lunch, get back into the field. And watch the games and give your input.
And I think that's actually why I wanted to have this discussion with you, was because obviously working in a team setup, you start realizing that, I mean, rehab is rehab.
Mm.
We need to prescribe the rehab. Yep. We've got our estimated return to train, return to play. But what makes rehab effective is player buy-in.
Yes.
And it's understanding that by you prescribing, it doesn't mean that the player is automatically going to buy in.
Yeah.
And it is a different and a difficult scenario. I mean, we work in rugby, so obviously players are always getting injured.
Mm.
You're always having one or two that are in long-term injury or long-term rehab. Mm. But the key is actually understanding
what you're busy with.
What they're busy with, but also realizing that it is difficult on the player.
Yep.
Because we can also, from a medical side, we can become very, let's call it medical. We just say, ACL's off, referring to the surgeon.
Yes.
You're going for your surgery. You're going to come back. You're going to start with the physio. The physio is going to give you a thing. You should be start running in 6-7 months. You'll be back on field in 9 to 12 months. And we're like, go.
And I think, Doki, that is probably the correct way to state that, because you've seen that. And in your mind, you have seen, do this, surgeon will tell me this. And yeah, if this, he comes in between. But for us, all you feel is this pain, the instability, the question. Yeah, he says that. What if I'm not the one that makes it? What if he sees it? Because you've also seen the steps in between.
Yeah.
So it's my first ACL. I don't know. In the first six weeks, it's important to get full extension. Mm-hmm. I don't know that. So in my mind, but if medical staff takes you through the journey and say, listen, for this phase, this is important. This is why you do this. Like, I know it's not, it also depends from player to player, who's interested, who's not interested. But if you take that player on the journey and you explain to him explain to him this, and I had a physio, Carl Meyer, he's now at the Stormers,
traitor.
Traitor. but he took me on the journey, like, sent me clips, like, what was actually good. I don't know if my first or second ACL, it was the same time as Virgil van Dijk did his ACL. Mm. And like, he would send, because he's a big Liverpool fan, yeah. So he always send me, like, what's Virgil doing now? And then I was like, hey, Virgil can't beat me. Like, even if he's younger than me, I don't like Liverpool. I'm a Man United supporter. So like, that interaction, like, watching his journey, how he progressed, what they do, and I ask him, why did we do this? And he's explaining, no, we're actually doing that.
Yeah.
This is what you're doing. Like, they just have a pool and this just looks cool in the Instagram. But then taking that player onto the journey, because sometimes you get there and the difficult part is, okay, the first part, everybody's like, oh, I got injured. And then they start off, get like a first month into injury, and it's like, life goes on.
Yeah.
And then when you come back, it's like, oh, you know, terug.
Yeah.
It's like there's a long sleeping pause in between. And then you get forgotten by the players and stuff.
Yeah.
Because they're like, oh, there's this guy again. Oh, it's your brace now. No one actually notices your brace is off. But to take that player through their journey and explain to them, okay, this is where we're going. And obviously you don't want to get too far ahead because your mind also might get like, oh, I'm supposed to be there. And then also the trust, because if, like, probably trust in your process. If you now say, listen, your quad's going to be stronger, and we test it, and like, oh, he's talking the truth. So that trust, taking you on the journey, but also making sure that you make me understand that my body can either be faster or slower on process.
Yeah.
That's just three things. Because now you think, I'm supposed to be there, but your body can be slower. Or you're quicker, but shouldn't I supposed to be only doing this?
Yeah.
Or you normal? That the player understands, listen here, I don't know if there's three or those three scenarios can happen. You can have hiccups, you can be slower at the start. You can be normal, you can go the 9 months, or you can do it in 6 months. But we will track it. We will see that you do better.
Yeah.
But trust me, let's do maybe one more week. Because you tell me now, yeah, it's not boring. I can jump from side to side. But let's do one more week.
Yeah.
And that you build that trust, and that you walk that journey and say, oh, you're on schedule or you're behind schedule. This is the reasons. Or you're ahead of schedule. But let's still be careful. So I think educating the player also, like, throughout the journey.
Yeah.
But it also depends from player to player. Like, some players don't want to be educated.
Yeah.
And other players to actually want to understand what's happening to their knee.
Yeah.
And having that conversation.
And did you ever need to consult with a psychologist in your ACL journey? Again, yours sort of happened at it wasn't a time where you had your ACL, then you returned.
Mm.
But again, you're potentially at this massive moment where you've gotten injured.
Mm.
You're now navigating thoughts of, maybe I'm too old and maybe I actually need to retire.
I think what helped me is my continual involvement with the team. So you still felt like when the weekends, when they play, you still felt like, now you can, because you stay on task with, because sometimes they say, okay, you got the ACL, first month, I'll just get him away from the team.
Yeah.
But that in my case, could be the worst thing, because then you're not up to sketch with the calls. You don't know what's happening.
Yeah.
So for me, staying involved and understanding, okay, this is how we run the lines, knowing, okay, they're going to play this move now, keeps me mentally insane. I understand what's happening there. I just need to get my body there.
Yeah.
But the struggling thing is getting there, cause has changed. You feel like an afkop winner.
Yeah.
You don't know where to go. You're still managing this knee, but you feel out of sorts. You're on the other team, on the Puffy's team. They run a move. You don't know, like you're just there. Where if you understand, oh, they're doing that move, you understand, okay, yeah, they go, okay, that's the flow, yes, this is happening, okay, watch out for that. So now mentally you understand. Physically you might not be there,
yeah.
But mentally, for me now personally, mentally you're like, okay, I still don't know what's happening. Because basically if not, then there's not in my instance an experience. If you're that age, what is experience? You've seen this. So all you do is, I've seen this movie. I just need to get there.
Yeah.
Like highball, yes, Mone Stein's going to kick a highball. I've seen this movie before. I need to get up and get the ball. So if I know, oh, I've seen this for the last 6 months or 8 months, I just need to get there. So what do I need to focus? Make sure that when we do rehab in there, I give 100% to get there. But if I still need to manage that, still need to have the, there's no way, but there's a lot of crowd. This guy's running this line. Oh, where should I be? Then for me, that whole mix of stuff gets to you, because then the doubt comes, because then you're like, I don't know where I'm supposed to be. I'm always late. I feel maybe the coaches get frustrated with you because they expect it a bit. And now this whole thing of, oh, maybe I'm not good enough. But if you, basically what experience is you've seen this thing.
Yeah.
So if you make sure that 8 months or whatever you're busy with, you've seen enough, that will carry you. You will know why it breaks down, and you will know, okay, I can't get there because it's my knee. It's not because I'm not good enough.
No.
It's just because, I mean, my knee strapped like hell, like plasters on it.
Yeah.
So when it's strapping down, when we do more rehab, I'll get there. I'm a bit tired now. I'm getting there, but I'm just tired. My fitness needs to get up. So then you can, in my opinion, you can measure yourself.
And again, that's what's important for us. And I guess I've now worked in rugby for 9 odd years. And you start realizing that there is this massive component where the player actually needs to still understand what's happening on the field. And it's not just, we come from a hospital background,
yes.
where you sort of see, or hospital, or even if it's a clinical a clinical setting, you see your patient, you prescribe the rehab, and they sort of take it on. Yep. Whereas in this environment is different, where we're seeing each other every day. And what you just mentioned now is you starting to say, you start running now on the field, and in our head, we're just like, okay, Gio needs to do his straight line, or he needs to do his agility, or your final phase, integrating him back. So in your head, you're thinking about that, and we're thinking about that, but you're also on the other side looking at training.
Yes.
You're like, oh, flip, what is that they just played?
Yes, because life goes on.
Yeah.
Like even being there, it the game goes on. We need to win the next Saturday and the next Saturday and the next Saturday. So while I'm standing there, and what a lot of times pass injuries. You stand out there, and then at fitness, then you look across and you're like, I've got no idea, but let me focus here. Yeah. But sometimes in your break, when you run your one set and you stand there, you're like, oh, okay, when you invest it and you know that, okay, they're going to get off the top now, they're going to play wide, they clean it up. Okay, why is this guy not in position? And then you go for your next run. But you're kind of in it. But now, if you're not in it, you don't have a clue that you're focusing on here. And you became so narrow focused on any little pain.
Like,
Doc, it's, should that be there?
Yeah.
And then, like, you focus so much on your knee that when, if you now for, just think, if you now, from a rugby player's perspective, you now focus for 8 months on your knee, what are you going to focus on when you're getting back in the field? On your knee again.
Yeah.
Because now you, your only reference point for the last 8 months is your knee.
Yeah.
Because you haven't been, you haven't seen the game, or yes, your last phase you were integrated, but the last chunk of that thing you were focusing on your knee. So any movement on your knee, you don't think about starting, let me worry about the play. You were thinking like, Doc, check on, because for the last 6 months, and also maybe because I might be wrong, you didn't understand the process also. Like, that's normal to feel like that. Week 4. Week 6, yes, it's extension, but there will be still, okay, that's not supposed to be there. Let's figure it out. Okay, let's take your week back as the journey goes on. But because I only come into rehab, I'm here, I do my rehab, I go home, I'm here, okay. When you're closer to the team, you're like, oh, is this guy still at the Bulls? Or still at the Storms? Yeah. Okay, yeah, he's here now, okay. Okay, let's find a spot for him. But he hasn't been there consistently to understand, okay, no, he's not, he's still part of us.
Yeah.
And okay, he also understands his knee. He knows, that's fine. He will ask you, you said it'll be normal.
Yeah.
There's something totally wrong. And I think I believe that will be the next 3 to 6 months easier on you, because then you understand, like, okay, all I need to focus now is to get there where I'm supposed to get and get to that level again.
Mm.
Don't worry about the knee is sorted.
Yeah.
My place is sorted. I just need to get to that level. But now my knee is still iffy. I'm still struggling here to get the feel of the game or whatever. I still need to get there. So there's too many things to focus on where you, for the last 8 months, you only focused on one thing. Now you have three things to focus on, which makes it a bit.
I think that's what I wanted to get into. It's just that injury is, from a player's perspective, it's different to what we see.
Mm.
What goes on in your head is very different to what goes on in our head, especially when we're managing you. Mm. But I mean, how do you think, obviously from your experience and also just when you think about it, how can we as sports medicine professionals support you as the athlete better?
I think first you build a trust. And I know it, this is not a doctor's job, but to show they care.
Mm.
Like the main thing is like I know what you're going through.
Yeah.
And check in from time to time. Like, because always now you move on to the physio. But at the doc, because the only time we go into the doctor, back to the doc, and I know he's busy, but the only time we're going back to the doc is there's something wrong. So because see this, or the surgeon, but the doc doesn't come and check in and say, how does the knee look? How does it feel? Okay, yeah, it looks great, great, because that gives confidence. Because now, at some stage, you don't believe your physio also because you build this relationship with your physio where it becomes more like a friend than a physio. So now at times you think, oh, you're talking about other stuff and you joke around. But then if the doctor comes in and says, listen, yeah, looks good. Me and Carl were chatting about this. Okay, you see you're still struggling with it, but don't worry. You're right. Remember, if I give a little explanation of jump onto him, I think they trust. That we know, like, he's nobody's talking about. He sends me to the right people. Care that even though you don't care, to show you care, like, is there, even talk asked about me. And maybe I would also say, like, if in a team environment, maybe a head coach or assistant coach or someone, I don't know if that's possible because their heads are also trying to keep their jobs, but just come in and from time to time, walk into the physio room and don't make the comment. I know there's a lot of comments. Oh, he laid him. Yes, yeah. Eyes out again. Like a message is coming. How's your knee going? How's it going? Oh, good, good. The doc in the physio gave me a report. So now you know they're talking. They actually caring about you, but they also having tabs on you. So you can't go on the weekend and jump off a balcony being drunk at some stage. There's actually people that looking. They're not putting pressure on you.
Yeah.
But they actually care that.
We're just tracking your progress.
And like an interaction that you know, like, okay, no, these people are not, I'm not, because the first thing you, when your injury happens, you're like, okay, shock. Okay, you're thinking about 9 months.
Yeah.
How do I get, what about my contract? What about this? Yeah. What if I don't get? So that's the first thing that goes into your mind. The second thing happens, okay, now the coaches don't worry about you. So now you can't use you. So you know on that side of the thing. And now you know in there, like, you know, starting to, and that's where the doubt starts creeping in, like, will I be able to get better? But if you have someone that's actually there and tracks you and shows interest, and even if it's a small chat or I don't say a coffee, but like phones you.
Mm.
Because I remember, like, one thing I would always remember, like, Luke Watson was captain when I started at Province. And there was one specific year I didn't play a lot, I didn't play a lot for the Currie Cup team. Went to Super Rugby and played Currie Cup. But then occasionally you will phone the guys that don't play. And then you will phone them and say, listen, yeah, thanks for this.
Sure.
Keep up the good work. I spoke to that time, Gary was the guy. I spoke to Gary. They're looking at maybe giving you guys a game against Falcons or whatever. So stay sharp. Because if you think the coach and the captains, why just worry about the team they play? No one worries about the dirties who's not playing there.
Yeah.
And now I'm not talking about like the dirties. But if the guys are injured, give the guy a call. How is it going? Like, unexpected call. Because the call comes, what test must I do for Doc now?
Yeah,
COVID test. Yeah, I'll come. But if because the physio is the closest guy you get, or the coach, or whoever it is, or the manager, or the doctor, just give that guy a call and says, listen, yeah, how's it going? Like, we see your progress going good. How's things? Tell me when you're around. You grab a coffee, come sit there in the office for chat for 5 minutes. Let me check out your knee again. Even if it's a checkout, you know he doesn't even need a check.
Yeah.
Just think that guy, and I was mature enough when my injuries happened, but if you think like a young kid who's a 19-year-old, a 20-year-old, 22-year-old, just breaking through, who suddenly has doubts like, should he do this? And you will see like through injuries, a lot of guys mature like for 2 years because suddenly they realize this rugby thing can end quickly.
Yeah.
And they mature a bit longer, but that also might be next time when he's ready to play and the other guy's injured, he might be that other support patient comes from time to time and sits in the physio office and talks to the guys who's injured and say, no, don't worry, I've been through this. You'll be back here where I am. Don't look at my legs. Don't worry. The one will look, smaller than the other one. Don't worry about, I think this that team environment, because when we say professional sports, we always quantify team as the guys that's playing.
Yeah.
The guys that's in the starting, who wears the jersey. But there's also other guys that's on the other side with the bips. And there's guys that's on the other side who doesn't even make the bips. And then there's guys on the other side who's injured that you have. And I know it's difficult because you need to win. It's professional rugby.
Yeah.
But if I don't know if it's the medical side of that's responsible, whose responsibility is that. But I think from a medical perspective, to make sure that those guys that's out of the mix always feels that they're still on par. So if by miracle your knee's ready tomorrow, that you can play Saturday because you know exactly what's happening. Kind of.
And a big part of that is the mental aspect of it.
The mental aspect of it. Because then because maybe then it's easier to identify also the doubt. Because also now the guys for 9 months is out of the mix, doesn't participate in teams. Now he comes back and now suddenly his doubts. So I'm not sure if I'm fast enough.
Yeah.
But while he's busy, there can be both ways. He can stay on top of it mentally, but he can also realize, maybe I'm not up for this anymore.
Yeah.
And then you can, while he's doing his rehab, maybe get him someone in to say, listen, yeah, don't worry, this is normal.
Yeah.
A psychologist, because normally the guys, after the injury, you see like that phase where they go through it. There's so much doubt. This guy's confidence is low. It's maybe because he only realizes then, but this is maybe too much for me. Or, how am I going to get here? Because I need to be there and to understand that. And my knee is still bothering me. So just to that whole process, that whole mental process, when the guy comes back, his main focus should be like, I must be there. The game should be sorted. The knee should be sorted. Maybe with minor things, but I just need myself to be there.
Yeah.
And get in that care on the field, whatever it's supposed to.
Yeah. And like you say, in a team setup, it's easy to forget that, especially with the younger players now, because to be honest, they look a lot older than they are.
Mm.
I mean, you look at your 19-year-olds, 20-year-olds that basically look like senior rugby players. Mm. And when you speak to them, you hear, but also sometimes you look at them and you're like, okay, you've just done your ACL. Mm. You almost expect them to process it like a senior.
Yes.
Because you forget that they're actually only 19 or 20. And the rugby age thing is always, for me, it's an interesting thing. But I think, like you said, it's important to actually identify that we hold a specific position in the team, which is, I guess, we can be not the player's friend, but the player can lean into us.
Can get trust.
And trust.
That's the main thing.
Because we ultimately have their best interest at heart. And we often have this discussion between coaches, medical, and coach wants to push, medical saying no, because we don't want to clear the player because it's not in their best interest. So we do hold a special position for the player as well. So it's an important reminder just to remind ourselves when we're working in team that's a position that we hold, that the player trusts us.
It's actually like the father that's not there. It's like, you are that person that actually can say, no, my child is not going to play Saturday.
Mm.
That's the ultimate power that a doctor or physio has.
Yeah.
Hopefully in a healthy environment.
Yeah.
With a healthy team environment. That he can actually say, no, my son's not going to play this weekend. But that son also understands that he can trust us.
Yeah.
If that father, doctor sends him out there, he knows I'm sorted. And but also then to create that environment for the son to be in, how can I say, in the house. So he's cared for, he's made sure that you're not going to leave your son in the room. And then after 9 months, come out, wash the paving for me, clean the pool.
Yeah.
You actually going to nurture him and make sure, okay, what is important now for him? Like, what is the most important things now for him? Maybe he just needs someone to drive him around.
Yeah.
I don't say that should be happening, but just in a house environment.
Yeah.
But what does he need at that specific moment? And then how do we combine it so when he gets back to reality, he still understands he saw me clean the pool, so he will know how to clean. He doesn't know a new thing or the pavement, whatever that might be. So just, I think just to create that environment, I would say it's very important to play that father role, because that's ultimately what the medical staff is. Because if the medical staff says no and the coach decides he's going to play the player, there's big trouble.
Yeah.
So that medical staff is actually the last instance. And funny enough, I had a conversation with Kanan a couple of months ago. He probably wouldn't mind if I share this. But everybody sees Kanan Mori, I think he's 22 years old now, as a guy who's been to won a World Cup. He's playing for the Springboks. So everybody expects him to maybe be mature, but he's still 22 years old.
Yeah.
And that's also the thing that I said, that sometimes, unfortunately, it comes with the territory that you play for the Springboks now. Everybody thinks you're 28, 29 years old, and you should think like that, and you should put your hand up in a meeting and say, but he's still a colored boy from Pala, who's still shy, didn't say a lot. He's still 1 year out of his 21 years when he's supposed to only be a senior now. To get into the senior team. And if you're your first in the senior team, you don't say a lot.
Yeah.
But yes, you've been with the Springboks. So also maybe handle the kid according to his biological age.
Yeah.
I think sometimes we forget that. Yes, there's guys that's mature, more than mature, but start at base and say, listen, this kid is 19 years old.
Yeah.
What does a 19-year-old kid needs that doesn't play rugby, that hasn't been to a big school? What does a normal patient need?
Yeah.
Like, I know you're not going to send him away and let him do his own rehab. But what is a normal, because they're still normal human beings put into this bubble of playing rugby, and a lot of them comes through a school system where there's also been a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
Don't tell a school coach now, coach, I don't want to play because I got a headache. You play because everything, like it's school now with this competition they have, a lot of these players hide stuff, and they'll get to a point also where they just need someone to trust to say, listen, yeah, but I struggled with this foot for so long, but I couldn't because Dad said I must play. Mom was there next to him. Mom is the biggest cheerleader. They and the other parents are having prize. I couldn't say wife. We didn't have that, but I couldn't say that. Coach was saying, he's a morphe if you don't play.
Yeah.
So I think a lot of these kids coming through now, they also have the different challenges. But when they get here, when they're young, and even if they played for the Springboks, and the reason is a 22-year-old, because we always have the perceived idea, he's now at the top level or he's now at the sevens. He should be. But should be, could be. Could be in many, many things.
Yeah.
You can be a 3 years old that still acts like 19-year-olds. So that's also...
No, Gio, on that, thank you so much.
Thanks, Doki. We didn't even get into the deep, many big stuff. Where I want to explain.
We'll leave that for another episode.
The surgery of it.
No, but thank you so much. I think it's
a pleasure.
Just the insights that we can get from you who's lived injury, who's lived the professional environment from the other side. I think it's quite special to be able to have this. So thank you so much.
And I think the last thing, Doc, and I also think with niggles, I think, like, obviously that's not more work for the doc, but sometimes you go through niggles and you don't ask and you don't say, because if you now think your biggest concern is an ACL rather than a niggle.
Mm-hmm.
And just for the guys with the niggles also too, I don't know if there's another doc or there's a special attention for them. Because a niggle can also get, because a niggle is actually worse than an injury, because the injury now you've done.
Yeah.
But a niggle is like, I scour, but this dog just says I'm okay.
Yeah.
I scour, but and like later it just keeps quiet.
Yeah.
And he plays through this pain and later he's like, no.
And that's the reason he's missing a tackle.
And you think about, oh, that dog, no, he doesn't listen. I don't trust him. Because he just keeps, oh, that coach, I just keep on playing. So I think there's also a...
Yeah. It's tricky. People. It's tricky to navigate in a team environment. And I guess I'm fortunate with a smaller squad size, because once you get to 15s, it's a massive squad size, massive. There's juniors, there's seniors.
Mm.
But again, I think it just comes back to trusting the player and their, and what they're saying. When their body is not feeling right, trust that their body is not feeling right.
But I think you build that trust.
Yeah.
I think because you show care, I would never lie to you. For instance, if you show care to me, I will always say, yes, I can never
be. Yeah, no.
You will know. But all of this, we say in the perfect world, and rugby is not a perfect world. Like, this is not the perfect science. The squad is 50 players.
Yeah.
There's 40 to train every day, and it's only 10% that's...
And every niggle is an actual niggle.
Yes. So don't take this. Don't do this at all.
No, Gio, thank you so much. I appreciate it.